In our current digital era, it's not uncommon to scour the internet about a potential romantic partner before a first date or making an even bigger commitment. And while most bad apples can be sussed out with a rudimentary glance at a Facebook post or reading through a LinkedIn bio, advocates in the domestic violence space are looking for additional tools to prevent someone from inadvertently entering into a relationship with a known domestic abuser. For more on what resources might look like, we're joined by Amy Siniscalchi, a licensed master social worker who is the chief program officer for My Sister's Place, a Westchester County-based organization working to end domestic violence and human trafficking. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thank you so much, David.
Before we get into the legislation that your organization is pushing for, I want to talk about the problem you're hoping to address, which is to potentially prevent someone from unknowingly entering a relationship with a domestic abuser. Do you have any sense of how frequently women, or I guess even men, are caught unaware of something like that? And in these cases, are they at a higher risk of becoming victims of domestic abuse themselves?
What happens when you start to date somebody and red flags start to go up is you do exactly as you mentioned earlier. You know, maybe you'll take to Google, you'll look on their Facebook page. We have more tools, you know, now at our disposal to look people up than we ever have before. And you may see things that kind of raise your suspicions, but you may not really know if you can trust your gut or if certain behaviors are really indicative of somebody's level of danger to you or risk to you or your family. And sometimes what happens is if a person who is potentially a victim asks the potential abuser to explain something that seems suspicious, that person may respond with, well, you know, that was in the past, that was 10 or 15 years ago. It was, you know, it was a fight I got into outside of a bar. It meant nothing. Or, you know, me and my buddies were you know, drinking and things got a little rowdy, or it was just boys being boys kind of a thing, without ever really knowing if that's the truth. And so this, you know, helps us kind of advance the ball down the playing field as far as being able to find out information so that people who are entering relationships can enter with as much of a sense of safety and security as possible.
Yeah. So when it comes to tools that you'd like to see moving forward, can you talk a little bit about what is available right now when it comes to looking up the criminal background of New Yorkers and what you'd like to see available in the future, specifically with regards to information about family offense convictions?
Currently, anybody in New York State can go to the Department of Criminal Justice Services, DCJS, to their website, and you can look up anyone who is a registered sex offender. So anyone who has been convicted of assaulting, raping, forcible touching to either adults or children. And that is obviously something that is a very useful tool, especially to families, let's say, who are moving into a new neighborhood or, you know, moving to a new school district who want to kind of check out who's in the neighborhood or who's around. But it's also a good tool for adults to check out, you know, has this person ever committed a sex offense against an adult or a child, which are considered obviously very serious offenses. Currently, anyone in New York State can also access a searchable database on the Department of Corrections and Community Solutions website, I believe it's called DOCS, D-O-C-C-S, which has a searchable database of folks who have offenders who have been convicted of crimes where they've been serving prison time in New York State. So anyone who's currently in the prison system in New York State or anyone who has been released from commitment to prison within the last 5 years will come up on this database. The problem with it is that their names come up with the crime that they committed, but sometimes the names of these crimes leave much more to be imagined as far as what actually happened or what occurred. Crimes like assault or, you know, harassment, criminal contempt, menacing, things that have sort of generic criminal names, criminal crimes that are hard to kind of pin down as far as what really happened. You won't know if any of those crimes were committed against a family member, either an intimate partner or somebody related to the perpetrator. All you'll know is whatever the perpetrator who's in your life happens to tell you about who it was committed against. So we are looking for a way to have family offenses and aggravated family offenses added to this database so that, you know, if you search the database and you see a crime like this, and it's a crime that a potential abuser could really explain away, that seeing family offense or aggravated family offense would raise your red flags even more.
According to the bill memorandum, in crafting this legislation, there was a focus on preserving the privacy of survivors of domestic abuse. How was that accomplished?
At one point, there was a suggestion to include photographs of the abusers and a more exact address of where the abuser lived. And there are some victims out there who are still in relationship with the person who assaulted them or committed the crime. And in some cases, those abusers and perpetrators are, let's say, the father of their children, or they're the breadwinner. Once they're released, they're the breadwinners in the family. They're earning the income. So there are victims who don't want that level of detail included in a database that would identify to the larger community, you know, where this person lives or what they look like. It's just one more layer of protection for those victims who don't want that information out there. And yet it still gives potential victims the ability to search a name and to get some level of detail to confirm maybe their suspicions.
So this bill is coming at a time when our criminal justice movement is kind of moving in the opposite direction. We've had support for measures that would essentially clear criminal records after their formal debt to society has been paid. There was a big pressure for this clean slate bill, for example. So why should this legislation be advanced, which would move in the opposite direction, essentially ensuring that domestic abusers are constantly dogged by their past? They really can never get past this maybe one-time mistake, I guess, in their life?
Domestic violence advocates obviously don't refer to domestic incidents or family offenses as one-time mistakes. Generally, these are patterns of abusive behaviors. The reality of it is most people are not offenders in a domestic violence context, but most domestic violence offenders reoffend with new victims. So what we're trying to do here is to say, if this is a person who has done this sort of thing before, who has committed this kind of a crime before, you should know about it and be aware of it. I'm currently working with a survivor whose ex-husband, who very, very badly abused her, went on to abuse a new victim very severely pretty recently. And the two victims recently connected and found out that there was a third prior to the first victim. So this is what we're talking about. We're talking about patterns of abuse, pervasive behaviors. And the other thing I would add is that this legislation doesn't change the amount of time that this information is up on the database. Currently in the laws that exist already, this information is up on this database for 5 years from the date of release or the date of the end of the parole. So that timeline doesn't change. And in addition, there are also provisions in previous bills that state that employers can't discriminate against people convicted of mm-hmm. crimes if the offenses are not related to what the employment involves.
And finally, I'm aware that this bill was drafted and pushed for, at least in part, with survivors sort of leading the charge and helping to hone this. Are there other, I guess, survivor-led initiatives that you're eyeing for the 2022 legislative session?
Absolutely. We are working really closely with the New York State Coalition Against Domestic Violence, NISCDV, with their policy team, constantly on reviewing legislation that's coming up. And one of the key pieces of survivor-led legislation that we've been working on with NISCDV has to do with reforming family court for victims of domestic violence. There are so many cases of victims who have children with the abuser, where the family court is not taking into consideration the pattern and the pervasiveness of the domestic violence when it comes to making decisions about child custody and child visitation. And so there's a number of laws right now, a number of bills being considered in the legislature, and they're being spearheaded by a survivor named Jacqueline Franchetti. And one of them is called Kira's Law. Jacqueline's daughter, Kira, was murdered by Jacqueline's abuser. In spite of Jacqueline's efforts to get the court to understand that he was a real danger to her and her daughter, Kira. There's also supervised visitation bill and a forensic evaluator training bill. And these bills are all designed to really get the court to provide evidentiary hearings when there's domestic violence involved in child custody and child visitation, and to only award supervised visits to parents, to the offending parents in these situations while the evidentiary hearing is taking place, so that really the ultimate goal is that domestic violence is viewed as child abuse, which we firmly believe that it is as well. And so Jacqueline and a number of other survivors are pushing for these three bills to become law as soon as possible so that victims can stop falling through the cracks in family court.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Amy Siniscalchi. She is the chief programs officer for My Sister's Place, a Westchester County-based organization working to end domestic violence and human trafficking. Amy, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, David.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.